all rat channels. This is a class one emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Forbidden Book Group studio in Doubletown, USA, it's a Necronomapod with your hosts, Mike Stoffel and Mike Moncada. Episode 51, Dracula the Undead, the story of a poor little vampire who is misunderstood and the people who want to kill him for it. And now, a Necronomapod.
You don't remember this book at all, do you?
Hardly at all. I'm sure. Look, my opinions. I remember my opinions.
Yeah. So first of all, how do you think you pronounce the author's name?
Bram Stoker.
That's the author's great uncle.
Oh, Little Miss Stoker.
I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Dacre.
Dacre Stoker.
Dacre Stoker.
Oh dear.
I know.
I was thinking it was Decker.
Decker or Dacre. Or Dockery. No, I think it's Dacre.
That's got to be a made-up name.
It's Dacre. Because I listened to it. I found an audiobook of it.
Oh!
Yeah, which was really good. It was a really good performance. But it was performed by a British dude who I am pretty sure, out of just professional decency, learned how to properly pronounce the author's name.
Oh, okay.
So it's Dacre. That's all he said.
Dacre Stoker.
Dacre Stoker. Stoker. Yeah, he did say Stoker. And I used to think that it was Stalker.
You say Stalker, I say Stoker.
You say something her, and I say
poker.
Poker. So, all
right.
So,
wow, we're jumping right in.
You finished this book more than a month ago.
At least a month ago.
Yes, and I finished it two nights ago.
God, I'll be relying on you
for the details. I listened to the whole thing in 3 days, on Sunday, because it was such a beautiful day. I just I plugged my ears in, and I just walked around, and I finished the day at dusk, sitting on the porch with a Manhattan and a cigar, listening to the book.
Wow, that sounds awesome.
It was actually a pretty great way to end the day.
Well, what'd you think?
I really liked it.
I really liked it, too.
I thought it was pretty good.
We'll have
good.
Nothing to talk about.
Okay,
we
well,
it.
So what should we read next time? I really liked had to dig further into Bram Stoker's Dracula than I really have had any other horror book.
I was wondering how this would.
And it's really interesting what they did with it, because they make Bram Stoker a character.
Yes.
And
kind of
an ass, and they have to explain why Stoker's book is the way it is, which is it's got all kinds of really great, interesting, foundational stuff to it, but it's also kind of a bad novel. In a certain level, it has inconsistencies. Things don't make sense. Characterizations are kind of bad, and so they kind of explain that by saying that that Bram Stoker just kind of
copied.
He kind of copied, and he just what was bad in the book was him being a bad writer, which is kind of gutty, because this is the guy who's writing this book is a relative,
right?
Who I don't know. I mean, I really don't know anything about Dacre Stoker.
Do they hold Bram in a place of honor in that family?
Exactly.
A family joke, or
Bram Stoker. The facts of his life, in broad outlines are true. He was primarily famous for being Henry Irving's manager, famous actor. And he ran a theater. He's Irish.
And the novel didn't do well.
And the novel, the originally yellow-covered novel didn't do well until it became a theatrical success. And then it's bootails. It's coattails dragged the novel along with it, and the novel got really popular. It's interesting. I mean, I really like the way the take that they did on it by setting it in the world of the theater, and that enabled them to do all kinds of stuff with.
I also liked that you got to see that the original characters, how it corrupted their lives, each person's life.
That I think is actually probably the best part of the book.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard, because these characters have gone on. I mean, this is not the first sequel. This is not the first time people have tried to write sequels to this book. I mean, it happens a lot, actually. And I've read, you know, I think I've read, you know, there's the comic book one, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, has Mina Harker as a character.
Right.
You know, they talk about how her husband, Jonathan, was sort of, you know, ineffectual, and she just sort of left him not too long after the events of the novel. That's kind of it happens a lot, I think, in these retellings. Is kind of sad. But the way that it works out with all these characters in this particular book, I thought was kind of fascinating.
I did too.
It was really, really, and all the characters kind of really breathed for me, and they were recognizably
the characters. Yeah. Isn't at the end of the novel, Bram Stoker's novel, mm-hmm. isn't she pregnant? Or doesn't she have a baby? And isn't there sort of a question of...
I think so. Here I've like talked up my, you know, my mastery of the original novel, but...
you couldn't even remember the end.
Well, nobody remembers the end, because the end is boring.
I seem to remember the annotated, illustrated version.
Uh-huh.
At the very end, there was sort of this picture of a baby with this kind of look on its face. And
That could be. Yeah, you know, I think you could be right. I mean,
my copy is buried somewhere. I don't think I have it around here.
Because the thing that everybody remembers from the end is the big chase across Transylvania and the big climactic scene at the gates of Dracula Castle when Quincy dies. But they are able to get Dracula. And then that's just pretty much it.
Right.
I don't really remember the denouement. The epilogue or anything.
Yeah, there is an epilogue. There's one.
Oh, shame on us for not doing our homework. But all those pivotal scenes, you kind of get to see, you know, in this novel, Dacre Stoker gets to kind of end Ian Holt.
I am guessing wrote most of the book.
Well, I don't know. I was thinking about that, and both of their names are on the title. On the cover, you know, we're just gonna say I'm not even gonna speculate.
Okay.
to both of them go the credit and the gripes
and the responsibility
The way they get to recast, I was gonna say they get to recast those pivotal scenes, like the big scene in front of Dracula's castle, and becomes so much more dramatic because you get to see it a couple times, don't you?
From different angles, perspectives, yeah.
And it breathes life into that scene in the book, the original book, which is kind of hammy, frankly.
Yeah.
The whole story about how Dracula stalks and kills Lucy Westenra.
His motivation.
His motivations are he's remotivated. I have to admit, when you were giving me the brief synopsis of this book, a month ago, and just after you'd finished it, I thought, "Oh God, I don't know."
Really?
Yeah, because it kind of pissed me off that they make Dracula a sympathetic character, because that is another symptom of the twilightization of the vampire.
But he isn't cuddly.
He's not cuddly. No, he's not. That's the thing. He's
not a sparkly unicorn magic.
No. He's imperious. He's difficult.
He's stubborn.
He's kind of evil. He's lost track. His morality does not map onto human morality really well at all.
No, he's got vampire morality.
He's got vampire morality. And
he's got Wessonality.
yes, he does. because you told me I spotted him immediately, but you probably spotted him immediately too.
I did.
I mean, it was pretty obvious.
But it was like one of those things where you go, they probably want you to think that's him, but he's probably not him.
Yeah.
But then they want you to not think it's not him, but so it is him.
Oh, the double red herring.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that's way too obvious if that's him.
You know my other favorite part of the book was? It was what could have easily have been my least favorite part of the book. when they're describing how one of the constables gets eviscerated by I'm gonna forget how to pronounce her name now. The other vampire.
Countess.
The Countess blah blah
blah blah blah blah.
You know, forgive us. It's okay. Romanian. I can't pronounce it.
We'll just call her Countess B.
Countess of the Blood Countess. The
Blood Countess.
When she eviscerates that constable and he sees like his arms have been cut off and he wants to throw up, but then he hears this big splash on the ground, then he looks down and his guts have been pulled out. And he wants to throw up, but he doesn't have the stomach for it. And I thought, that's is either funny. Really awful. I mean, it's the only time they do that in the book, as far as I can tell, where they make a really obvious, nasty, gory pun. But it was so, it was the only one, and it was so well turned that I just thought, oh, you're having fun too. I'm just...
Just go with it.
It was
are some grueling scenes.
That was a rough one.
That was a rough run. The girl and the cat in the wasn't really a castle. I guess it was kind of a castle. The girl in the beginning.
When the Blood Countess harvests takes her blood bath, first blood bath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when Jonathan Harker on a spike.
Yeah, that was. I thought that was really gutsy, because I didn't think that, you know, I thought a lot of these characters are going to be sacrosanct, but no, they pick them off.
Yeah, one by one.
One by one, and really nicely paced too, so that, you know, Seward gets killed, but you know he's set up as sort of this really super damaged character. He's like, you know, this is the one. This is like,
He never gave up the hunt.
Yeah, and. But he's so damaged that, you know, he kind of has to die to set things in motion. Yeah. He's that death.
He's a catalyst.
He's a dead Kevin Costner that sets the big chill in motion. and then, but then when Jonathan Harker dies, and it's so horrible, because he's not quite dead. He's just up there wriggling on the pike.
Yeah.
Oh, in Piccadilly. So,
The Lord.
Lord Godalming. Arthur Holmwood.
Yeah, Arthur. Yeah.
Yeah. Who in the original book is a cutout. You wonder why Lucy decides to marry him, because he's so unappealing except for his money and position. But in this book, he's much more interesting because he's got this great history that actually flesh out a little bit, you know, his years in various military campaigns, his prisoner of war, when he was a prisoner of war, and he's actually lived something. He's not just hiding behind his money, although.
But then he did hide behind his money.
Then in the end, he does hide behind his money.
And then he doesn't.
And then he doesn't. He actually gets some gumption at the end and stands up. And
I found the character of Quincy the most annoying character.
Yeah,
because his motivations were too. That was, I think, to me, that was the most poorly written part of the book, is that his motivations are almost. I don't want to say this. They sort of erupt out of nowhere in some ways. His reactions are so extreme.
Yeah.
And he's really used as this device to move things along as well.
Yeah.
So he has to, but it doesn't. It's like, oh, come on. They kind of have this fight. He has this fight with his mother
He's too histrionic. Well,
He's histrionic.
He's a theater major. You know the
this
type.
This is true.
You know the type. What crisis am I going to provoke today?
That's true. Never quite thought of it that way, but it's a little too easy.
It's a little too easy. Yes,
it's like Glee goes to Dracula.
I know he's chock full of adolescent angst, and it's a little cliche. I will admit. He is a kind of an interesting character, but the most interesting character is, of course, his mom,
who always is. She's always
the
most
interesting.
She's
always
the
most interesting.
She's even more interesting than Dracula in a lot of ways.
She is. She really is.
And even in the first book.
Yeah, and which is why she shows up. She's the character more than Dracula himself, honestly. More than Dracula himself. She is the enduring character in that book. The one that people keep picking up and writing stuff for.
What is her appeal?
It's because she's clearly, even in the original book, she's clearly so capable. Yeah. She's so capable, but she, at the same time, she represses her capability so that she doesn't overshadow her kind of dimwit husband. He's not a dimwit. I mean, he's a good person. His heart's in the right place, but he's kind of plodding. He's just going through the proper motions,
But you know, you gotta remember in the book, he gets pretty ruined.
Yeah.
You know, he's basically held prisoner and tortured.
Yes.
And
they make explicit in this book the what actually happens, which is that he's raped by these women. And they also make explicit that that Mina's first sexual experience is with Dracula. Which is, you know, bow chicka bow wow. Brown chicken brown cow.
Brown chicken brown cow. I always assumed she was deflowered by Dracula.
Yeah, well, I mean,
and I don't know if they felt that way in the 1800s, but
it's curious because they always had to that kind of stuff, they always had to sort of elide very carefully. You had to really you had to write it in such a way that it could be easily taken another way, so that you could say that, oh well, no, it's, you know she maintains her virtue. It's under under assault, but she does maintain her virtue. But no, you know, there's coded words, there's coded scenes, there's time lapses that the fade out and the fade back in.
They're both smoking cigarettes.
The hair's tousled.
Dracula scrambled eggs?
I never eat scrambled eggs.
All right, I'll make poached.
Fine
poached.
I had this is completely off the subject. The other day, I was in the refrigerator, and there was an egg and a single egg in a dish. And I thought, oh, it's a hard-boiled egg. I'm going to have that. Cracked it. And raw egg everywhere.
That was pretty dumb.
That's pretty dumb on my part. See, because I could have figured it out by just shaking it.
Or twirling it.
Oh, well. Anyway, back to Dracula. The Undead. So you get the title. They talk about it in the book. And I guess I'd forgotten this, that Dracula was not the original title of Dracula. This title that Bram Stoker wrote the book under was called The Undead.
Oh, yeah.
And so, in a way, this whole book is kind of an attempt to revise the original book. So, I mean, it's set in the future. It's set, in 1912.
Yeah, it's like 25 years later or something.
Yeah, but all through it, Dacre Stoker and Ian Holt are basically rewriting the original book. And everything that happens...
Through memories.
Through memories. Yeah. I think it's pretty clever. It's pretty sophisticated.
Yeah.
And it really deserves. I think it really deserves the
Stoker title. Award.
It probably won't get the Stoker Award.
Really?
It might.
Why wouldn't it?
I don't know, because Peter Straub gets all those. Oh. They're all for him. Unless Stephen King has a really good book out that year. No, it really deserves the reputation as the sequel to Dracula.
It really does.
It really does. Because I was very skeptical, very skeptical. But I'm gonna buy it. I will consider it the sequel.
I'm glad that at first I thought they were gonna start doing everything through letters.
Oh yeah.
Because it kind of starts that way.
Yeah.
Then it doesn't. It just goes into a regular.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty. It starts with Mina's letter to her son to be read upon her death, which is the way that they for anybody who would actually. Well, actually, no, I think a lot of people would read this book not having read the original Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Right,
it's a way to get the entire plot in there. So this is what happened in the first book, and they actually write it into
the story.
It's the
letter
artifact. It's the one letter in the book then. That was pretty good. I enjoyed some of the other historical bits, like Dr. Stewart's flight, airplane flight.
Yeah.
I was gonna look this guy up. I'm sure that this is the guy who.
It's a real guy.
The real guy who really flew over the English Channel for the first time. And just some of the details. I'm sure that they've done their homework about, you know, when gas lights were turned into electric lights. When
I also like that they mapped the Jack the Ripper onto this.
Yeah, you know, again,
because Jack the Ripper is one of those other enduring characters.
Enduring characters because he's a complete blank. You can write almost anything you want onto him.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was again, when you were describing the story to me, I was unconvinced that was going to work, because it's almost cliche to like to throw some Jack the Ripper in there and maybe a Wolfman. They didn't throw a Wolfman in, which I'm grateful.
Or a mummy.
Or an invisible man. Although we wouldn't have known because he could have just been there.
He was there the whole time. Taking notes.
And the other one was to throw in the deadly vampire queen. And in this case, the most famous one, the blood countess. And I thought, oh,
a jealous lover.
This is all very, very cliche. Anyway, and she's got, and there's lots of hot lesbian vampire sex. Which, you know, it's very cliche, but, you know, I somehow can't get mad about it.
I did have to say that the little twist that Mina Harker was not aging, I wasn't expecting that.
You weren't?
No.
That's the case in Alan Moore, the like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. She doesn't age. Or she ages very, 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 very slowly. That was actually pretty cool. The twist that I didn't see coming, although I should have, I'm really bad.
Was finding her super strength.
That
also happened way too fast, as far as I was concerned.
It kind of did. No, it was the fact that that Quincy was
Dracula's son.
Dracula's son, not Donald. But you know, I bought it. But yeah, cool. Cool revelation. I have to say I did groan a little bit at the very end when they decide for, and I don't know why, they decide to throw the freaking Titanic in there too.
Yes.
Because he's on the Titanic now.
I had a question because I went back and read that a few times. What actually happened?
In the epilogue?
Yeah, it seemed to me like Dracula may still have been alive.
Well, isn't it Quincy that's boarding?
Yeah, Quincy is boarding.
Yes, Quincy's boarding. He gets ripped off. He gets ripped off by the ticket agent.
Right.
And then the Titanic sets sail, and that's it. So, I mean, we know the Titanic sinks, but what's the purpose of the scene? What are we supposed to make of that? Does he die? Does he bob around forever in his undead state, walking across the bottom of the ocean?
Dracula?
Or Quincy? Because Quincy's half vampire.
Right.
I
it also seemed like there was a Quincy's getting on there as using an alias.
Yes.
But there also seems to be another box going onto the Titanic.
Oh.
Did I misread that? It seemed because it's like somebody the narrator or whatever reads the, you know, this box that has the name of I thought it was of Dracula's, his stage name.
Oh, yes. It's possible. See, at this point, when I was listening to this book, I'd been listening for about 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I was nearly done with my cigar and and at the bottom of a very tasty Manhattan. So my attention may have lapsed.
It seems to suggest that there will be a sequel. That's all I'm saying.
You're probably right. I mean, that's
some sort of sequel.
That's the only thing I could think of that the purpose of that scene was, is that to set up a sequel.
And that Dracula probably isn't dead. Because the man don't go down easy.
Even Buffy couldn't kill him.
Or could she?
No,
because he shows up again in the comic, in the season 8 comic.
Oh, good.
He shows up again.
I thought so. Overall, I mean, I came into this book rather skeptical because it seemed like such a a fix-up of, you know, this will sell a couple thousand books to Vampire Nuts.
Well, and what a hard book to write. And it's because, like you said, it's been kind of been done, the sequel's been done to death.
Yep.
And you have all the movies you're up against, which is always hard.
Always hard. But, you know, they acquitted themselves pretty well. That said, I have dim expectations for any sequels to this one.
Really?
I just expect
to be. Well, because all the really good characters are gone.
Yeah, unless they decide to bring them back. Either they're dead and they stay dead, or they come back and that cheapens the whole first book.
The only one that could come back would be Mia.
Well, doesn't both she and Dracula?
They go off in the blaze into the sun.
Yeah, they ignite off the cliff into the sun. Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe they fall into the water and they suckle off a plankton.
Yeah, see, you can't.
That so often happens.
See, our faithful listeners here can't see me, but my eyes are rolling and rolling and rolling.
See, well, like in Anne Rice's novel, one of the characters gets burned, and he burrows underground. And he eats, you know, he suckles off of worms and beetles, and slowly
eats the life
back into himself. So it could happen.
Yes, it could happen. Should it happen? I don't know. It's really hard. If you, the temptation.
You can't ever end a book anymore.
Yeah, you have to have the courage to end your book. Foreclose the possibilities. Make a decision. Write something new.
Yeah, but people want a brand, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how you
that's how you make your money.
That's how you make your money. Honestly, those kind of franchises where you can build a world and keep adding to it and the world gets bigger and more detailed, that's actually kind of cool when it's done well. But it's so frequently, not done well.
There is something to see there, because Quincy, if he's half vampire, then whatever that means is not really ever really explored in this book.
They don't. I mean,
we don't know if he's...
He gets some super strength action going.
And he kind of goes off his nut a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. He has a...
He's sort of petulant.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. I don't know.
I do think it's funny that Harker's whole problem with his wife was that she had sex with Dracula first, so he's always being compared
to this masterful lover. And his brown chicken, brown cow.
Brown bat. Brown chicken, brown bat.
I know. I mean, it's sad, you know, their marriage, because you get to see their courtship a little bit, and it's so sweet and so promising, and you get to see the ruination of it, and it's just bad.
Yeah, how these dark forces just taint everything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What do you think about the treatment of Van Helsing? Because Van Helsing actually becomes kind of a bad guy.
Yeah. Wasn't he become a vampire?
Yeah.
Which he often does as well in other books.
Yeah. But in this one, his motivations are...
His motivations have always been... in this book, we're always like kind of suspect.
Yeah.
Depending on how you turn the...
Yeah.
Turn the prism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know. I enjoyed...
I never liked the character of Van Helsing, ever. So,
no, especially not Hugh Jackman's Van Helsing.
No, I actually kind of liked that.
Well, it is Hugh Jackman.
It was Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Ackman. and that the Van Helsing storyline didn't really appeal to me. I just kind of meh. I really enjoyed the theater stuff. I like the whole world of turn of the century theater and how it was evolving, how electric lights came in, and the way that actors back then, stage actors were so revered. I don't know that you really see. I mean, I guess you see a few actors like that these days. They always have the name Sir in front of them.
Right.
Usually Sir Ian.
Right.
Something or other. McKellen, Holm. So And I like the fact that, Dracula would, I like the idea that Dracula would hide in plain sight by turning to the theater, and bringing his actual historical knowledge and gravitas to these historical roles like Richard III, or
I knew him.
Actually, I knew him. You know, his hump was actually on the other side.
Did I can't remember. Was that vampire? The vampire in this incarnation, was he able to be out in daylight? The weekend?
No, because they ignite at the end.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you know the long tradition picked up soon after the original Dracula started spawning sequels of rewriting the rules of the vampire to make them more coherent or to enable their characters to do more. This one does too. So some of the laws, some of the rules don't make any difference, like cross,
garlic,
yeah, yeah. But you know, daylight. Oh, look out for that.
But I think in the original novel, couldn't they go out in daylight?
I don't think so.
I thought he could, but just weakened.
You could be right. You could be right. Wow. I mean, my knowledge of the original one because is dimming and dimming and dimming.
Because in that one movie that was supposedly Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes.
He also appears in the daylight, but he's more he's like human, humanish.
You know, I'm glad you brought that movie up because I have to think that that the Bram Stoker's Dracula, that movie that Francis Ford Coppola directed, was large in these authors' minds. That impulse to flesh out those scenes that are kind of.
Right,
they're left undone, like the nature of the relationship between Mina and Dracula in Bram Stoker's Dracula is explored pretty thoroughly,
and there's a whole incarnation thing.
Yeah, and actually, like, you know, the motivation and the nobility and the some sympathy for Dracula in that movie.
Right.
I mean, yes, he's evil, but he's also, you know, he's a fantastic lover. and she has real...
And he was betrayed.
And he was betrayed. God. He was betrayed by God. And you know, she has real... They have real passion for each other.
Yeah.
Which they just picks up, you know, whole, basically.
Yeah.
I think... I wonder if...
And once you go Drac, you never go back.
That's... Have you been saving that for a month?
No, I just thought of it.
That's awesome. Once you go Drac, you never go back. See, that's going to go in there. Yeah. And whenever I thought of young Jonathan Harker, I always saw Keanu Reeves.
With gray hair.
Yeah, and
with
Cary
white in his hair.
And Cary Elwes as Dr. Seward.
Yeah.
It's funny, actually. Cary Elwes is Dr. Seward because Cary Elwes stars in another of my favorite horror movies, which is Saw, the original Saw movie.
Oh yeah.
That the character he plays in that and the character he plays in the original Bram Stoker's Dracula, kind of meld together kind of perfectly
in your mind
into this Dr. Seward here, as this doctor who is kind of morally corrupt and.
Is he morally corrupt?
Well, he's not morally corrupt. He's
his
moral core, I would say, is intact, but his day-to-day practice is thoroughly corrupt.
Because what does he do that makes him corrupt? I don't know.
Well, he's a bad junkie. His ability to like live his life is almost completely gone.
Well, I didn't take that as a moral corruption. I took that more as like he was so
he was consumed.
Destroyed by what had happened and what he saw that he just became an addict.
Yeah.
He kind of killed the pain. Because doesn't his whole practice falls apart and he loses his asylum and he's in debt.
And you find out later that Holmwood is financing him, even buying him his junk.
Yeah.
So.
In order to, which kind of, kind of made sense to me.
Yeah.
That this experience.
Sure.
That this experience and seeing those things that you never thought could exist could twist you.
Yeah.
Which a lot of which I give credit to this book, because a lot of books don't really, you know, people become so heroic that you don't see how people are touched.
Yeah, how it exacts a toll.
That way, yeah, right. Yeah.
And so much of the original book, even as you're reading the book, as a reader, it's so obvious to you what's going on, but all of the characters are so shackled by the rationality that much destruction could have been saved if they had simply opened themselves to the possibility
that this is happening.
Yeah. And Van Helsing is aware, but he's kind of cagey about it, or people don't believe him, until the, you know, his nose gets rubbed in it, and they, you know, Lucy Westerner like eats a kid in front of him. Then they're like, okay, I guess we need to be elaborate.
Well, and I don't know if it's because we're so immersed in the vampire,
mm-hmm.
because you can never write that book now.
No.
Because people go, well, that's a freaking vampire.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to.
It's a freaking vampire.
That, so I don't know if they were looking at that with jaded.
I mean, you just call it the vampire exterminator. It's like he comes in with a flashlight, looks up in the attic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You got vampires. Okay, what you're going to need to do? We're going to have to get some guys in here.
I mean, you know, this automatic, like, if we were, like, at a party and somebody had a scarf and it fell and we saw two marks on their neck. And
it wouldn't be because they screwed up while pinning a brooch.
Right. And then we never see them in the daylight and they're eating raw meat out of the refrigerator.
And all the cats are gone.
All the cats are blessedly gone. We think.
And the poodles are scared.
They won't cross over the river because they can't go over. You know, we would think, vampire.
What you got here is a vampire. We need to get some guys in here. I mean. Anyway, so we're in uncanny agreement about this book.
I know, which doesn't make for an interesting conversation.
So boring. so boring.
I was thinking you were going to hate it.
I was ready to hate it.
I know.
And so the fact that I
also thought it was a good book. So I thought, well, he likes good books.
He does like good books. And this is one of them. Yeah. No, I really quite enjoyed it. I would recommend this book to people who read vampire books. And I don't do that because there are too many of those.
Too many vampires. Is that like a Dr. Seuss?
Yes.
Too many vampires.
I will not drink blood in a flood, in the mud, with a spud.
With a bud.
After a bud. So, I don't know. We should, like, let's table the conversation of this book.
All right.
Either for a while.
All right.
Maybe permanently.
All right.
And instead, we should just discuss what we are drinking here.
Oh! Well, it's cocktail time!
It is cocktail time.
So, what are we drinking here?
Well, this is a little cocktail I'm going to call the Blood Countess.
Blah, 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 blah.
Blood Countess. And what you do...
I really wanted to call it Papa Mina's Cherry.
Papa Mina's Cherry. No, well
but there's no cherry in it.
There's no cherry in it. You can put a cherry in it and call it Papa Mina's Cherry. But until then, we're going to call it the Blood Countess. What you want to do is you want to get the hardest to find ingredient is this ginger liqueur called... Domaine de Canton. It's kind of a ginger cognac. It's available in the U.S. and probably even more available in Europe. So look for that. It's super tasty. And you're going to need some Campari. You're going to need some gin. And you're going to need some dry vermouth. And so take a shot and a half of the Domaine de Canton, a shot of Campari.
Wow.
A half shot of gin.
No wonder I'm drunky.
Yeah, a half shot of gin and a shot of dry vermouth. Mix those
good
together.
Good Lord!
Mix those together. Pour them over rocks and garnish with... I'm garnishing with a lime because that's what I have in the house.
I think candied ginger would be really good in it.
Candied ginger would be good.
Candied lemon.
Or just the classic slice of orange would be wonderful. Or... if you want to pop me in his cherry, throw in a cherry.
Or one of those candied orange slices, those candied jelly orange slices.
Do us all a favor and do not.
Wax lips.
Do not use a candied orange jelly slice. Oh, so there it is, the Blood Countess.
Glug glug, it's delish.
Chime chime. All right, we should pick a book.
All right, let's head on down to the cellar.
All right. So you're pretty excited about the about this book.
I kind of am.
All right,
which has me nervous.
Well, you should be nervous because it's beginning to crest its wave of popularity, and the faddish can be crap.
I don't know how forbidden then it is.
Well, as we try to not, we try to kid ourselves that we don't ride fads,
we try to get ahead of the fad usually.
Yeah, that's where we're at. Totally. That is where
I think right now we are a little ahead. Just a titch.
Yeah. I haven't seen it on the bus yet, so I guess we're okay.
I know that this book is optioned for a movie already.
Yeah.
And it was when it was being written.
Dang.
Just the treatment was... It was bought by Will Smith's production company.
So you're all probably really excited to find out what book we're talking about.
It's called Angelology by, what's the name again?
Danielle Trussoni. T-R-U-S-S-O-N-I. Angelology. About a horror novel. Actually, it seems kind of Da Vinci Code-ish.
Da Vinci Angel.
Morally.
The end times or corrupt angels.
Something. Corrupt angels, I think. Yeah,
angels gone. Apparently, angels are the new vampires.
Angels are the new vampires. See, I'm going into this book also a little skeptical.
Yeah,
which,
I am too.
Which I'm going to take as a good sign.
Right.
We'll see how that actually pans out.
So, you can probably get in the library.
Yeah, you can definitely get it in the bookstore. There's an audiobook version out there, which I am waiting for from the library. And we'll read it up
we'll
and talk it down.
We'll,
yeah. All right, let's all get right, the hell out of here. So
anything else
about
anything
about Dicker Stoker? No, I got nothing else about Dicker Stoker.
Would you read the sequel to the sequel if it came out?
I would read one.
You would read one of them.
This book I like well enough that it warrants reading the next one.
All right, yeah, I would
but,
too.
But if the next one disappoints me,
done.
We're done. We are done.
Is there anything else that
In the horror world?
Yeah. That you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, movies keep coming out. I finally managed to score a copy of the 1980s feminist slasher film. Slumber Party Massacre.
Oh, no.
Which was scripted by Rita Mae Brown, who wrote
Ruby Fruit Jungle.
Ruby Fruit Jungle, yeah. And I think it's directed by a woman, and you know, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm expecting kind of a mixed bag. It's probably gonna be
soft focus.
And yeah, it's probably gonna be an awful movie. It's gonna be a Lifetime slasher movie. Lifetime
starring Valerie Bertinelli and who's the other one that's always in there?
I don't know. Mary Lou Henner.
Mary Lou.
Anyway, all right. Well, should we?
Let's lovingly put a stake into it, knowing that it will return to us.
Exactly, and put some ineffectual garlic in its mouth.
And we'll put a hat on its head.
We'll put a hat on its head. a jaunty chapeau, perhaps a straw boater.
All right.
All right. See ya.